So we are pondering today ways to make the new evangelization more practical and effective through the active participation of each of us. We have the grace to see in today's readings how great is the gift we're blessed to offer, and how God is calling us to offer that gift from the heart. The first reading today, we have the remarkable scene of the visit of the Queen of Sheba to King Solomon. Sheba was located at the bottom of the Arabian Peninsula, encompassing modern Yemen across the Red Sea from Ethiopia. She, in her enormous retinue, undertook a journey of 2,300 miles. If you're wondering how long that is, it's exactly the distance to walk from Detroit to Los Angeles. She did it in order to come into Solomon's presence in search of his wisdom. She had heard reports in Sheba, thousands of miles away, about Solomon's wisdom and deeds. On Saturday at daily mass, the church meditated upon Solomon's answer to God's question to him, "Ask something of me and I'll give it to you." The 18-year-old baby king's response was for an understanding heart to distinguish right from wrong in order to better govern God's people. God was so pleased with Solomon's answer that he promised to give him a heart so wise and understanding that no one until then and no one after would equal him. Immediately thereafter, that wisdom was put to the test when two harlots who had just given birth came to him, one who had tragically smothered her child, rolling on top of the child during sleep at night, and then she had gone and taken the other child, replacing that child with her dead one. In an age prior to DNA testing, there was no way to know for sure whose mom that living child was. Solomon, as we know, asked for a sword to cut the baby in half, thereby outing who the real mother was. One woman was fine with the solution. After all, she had already lost her child. The other begged him to give the child to her competitor, lest the baby die. The teenage king, with that wise and understanding heart God had given, awarded the child to the true mom. Sacred author tells us, when Israel heard the judgment the king had given, they were all in awe of him, because they saw that the king had in him the wisdom of God for giving judgment. And that was just the beginning. The first book of Kings goes on to tell us, God gave Solomon wisdom and exceptional understanding and knowledge as vast as the sea on the seashore. He was wiser than all other men, and his fame spread throughout the neighboring nations. Solomon uttered 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He discussed plants from the cedars of Lebanon to the hyssop growing on the wall. He spoke about beasts, birds, reptiles, and fish. Men came to hear Solomon's wisdom from everywhere, sent by all the kings of the earth who had heard of it. So that was the context that the Queen of Sheba came to test him with subtle questions. Solomon explained everything she asked about, the text today relates. There remained nothing he couldn't explain. She said that his wisdom surpassed even the report she had heard. She praised the great fortune of Solomon's servants who had a chance to be with him daily to hear his wisdom. And in gratitude, she emptied her treasury, giving him 120 gold talents, the greatest quantity of spices known in the ancient world, and precious stones. Just to give you a sense of how valuable she accounted the gift of Solomon's answers, the gift of the divine wisdom with which he had been endowed, we can just focus on the money she gave. A talent is a weight of measurement. Each gold talent weighed 75 pounds. She gave Solomon 120 of them she had brought along with her on that 2,200-mile journey in her caravan. The price of gold, as of 3:30 this morning when I was writing this homily, was $1,573.30 per ounce. So the value of the gold the Queen of Sheba gave Solomon in today's money is 120 talents times 75 pounds per talent times 16 ounces per pound times $1,573.30 per ounce. Get ready. Just in money, she gave Solomon $226 million, $555,200. There's no way to calculate the cost of the precious stones or the huge quantity of spices. Solomon's wisdom, or better, the light God had given to Solomon to share, was more valuable than the price of the cathedral in Los Angeles where you'd finish the journey if you left today. We can ask how much we value God's wisdom, whether we would pay $100 or $100,000 to obtain it, whether we would walk 26.2 miles or 2,300 through a desert to obtain it, whether we would have the hunger and the unanswered questions about so many things with regard to human life to grasp how much we need it. But there's a more important point. St. Matthew's Gospel, Jesus referred to the hunger of the Queen of Sheba and said it was a test for the people of his age and our own. At the judgment, he said, the Queen of the South will arise with this generation and condemn it because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And there's something greater than Solomon here. If the Queen of Sheba had made such a journey and expended so much for Solomon's wisdom, how much more, Jesus was saying, should we desire and be willing to make enormous sacrifices to hear and live Jesus' own teaching? We've all been privileged to meet people who make this type of sacrifice, especially converts to the Catholic faith. Sometimes they need to pay the price of being disowned by their family for doing so. Sometimes leaders in different Christian denominations have to give up their titles, their houses, their prestige, even their flock in their parish or their diocese to enter the church. Sometimes in certain places of the Middle East, many have to put their lives on the line to become Catholic. And they do. Over and over again. They recognize in Jesus the pearl of great price, worth selling everything else, including giving their life to obtain. Sacrifice is small, they deem, compared to the gift they receive. They'll journey to the end of the earth. They'll sacrifice far more than gold, spices, and gems. And that is the treasure God has placed in earthen vessels. That's the treasure we're blessed to have the opportunity lavishly to share. Saint Pope Francis writes in The Joy of the Gospel, we have a treasure of life and love. And we're convinced from personal experience that it's not the same thing to have known Jesus as not to have known him. It's not the same thing to walk with him as to walk blindly. It's not the same thing to hear his word as not to know it. It's not the same thing to contemplate him, worship him, find our peace in him, as not to. We know well, he says, that life with Jesus becomes richer, and that with him it's easier to find meaning in everything. And he concludes by saying, this is why we evangelize. Having been filled with those types of riches, we echo St. Paul's discovery, woe are we unless we share that wealth. We have a treasure we just can't bury in the ground. We're impelled from within to invest it, to make 5 talents from 5, or 120 from 120. In my work helping the Holy See of the United Nations, I see how people long for the light of the church. Growing up in New England, everybody knew who the Catholics were. People made judgments. But going to the United Nations, you see people who have never lived outside of certain experiences where the gospel hasn't yet fully penetrated. We're coming up this year on the 5th anniversary of Laudato Si. I can't forget the day after Laudato Si was published. All of these ambassadors, none from Catholic countries, were quoting it. And not just quoting the headlines that they could have read in the New York Times. Quoting recondite passages from the interior, showing that they had really understood it. And part of my diplomatic work, if something like that were to happen, is to go on up on behalf of the Holy See and thank these ambassadors for their positive references to the Holy Father. And the things I would hear back, I read it twice, one ambassador told me from the Middle East. When I preach clergy days, sometimes it takes several months for priests to read documents from Rome. But this non-Christian ambassador had read it twice the night before. Others are constantly asking to get copies of our statements, even our boring statements, because they're written with premises that are 2,000 years old, rather than those faxed over from their capitals in political statements. There is this longing for the light. There's longing for wisdom. We can never take that gift for granted. But for us to share our faith effectively, we can't just be imparting disincarnated proverbs as spiritual consigliere. It's got to come from within. It's got to be heard. But it's also got to be seen. Jesus describes that truth in today's gospel. The greater than Solomon among us. He gives us his wisdom on something that was truly revolutionary in the Jewish mindset of his day. Hear me, all of you, and understand, he says. Nothing that enters from the outside can defile a person, but the things that come from within are what defile. Right before this, in the gospel the church pondered yesterday, Jesus was criticized because he and his disciples didn't do the scrupulous ritual washings of the Jews, of their hands, their cups, their jugs, kettles, beds, and other objects. All human hygienic traditions that hadn't been revealed by God, but that had become a collective neurosis for the Pharisees in Jesus' day and a substitute for real worship. Jesus said that nothing coming from the outside, either touching a jug or a ritually impure person, or even anything we eat, can make us impure in God's sight. The purity that God cares about, he said, is what comes from the heart. Jesus had come to give us a heart transplant. In the seminary of the Sacred Heart, we can't but think about what he did mystically with St. Mary Margaret Mary Alacoque, taking her heart out, putting it into the burning furnace of his own Sacred Heart, purifying all the dross, and putting it back in so that it would beat in loving synchrony with his own. It's what from the heart comes from the heart that matters to the Lord. He had come to take away our heart of stone and give us a heart of flesh, a heart like his that could love God and others. He wanted to help us become pure of heart so that we might see God, not with the eyes on our face, but on our interior eyes. The heart is the real core of the person, pointing to what we love and desire. And it's what's in here, and the actions that flow from the heart, that Jesus says renders a person pure or impure, holy or sinful. He says that from the heart, from what we desire, come sins like evil thoughts, unchastity, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, licentiousness, envy, blasphemy, arrogance, and folly. I want to stop only on the last one, folly, which is basically the lack of wisdom. The Greek word that St. Mark uses, aphrosune, doesn't point to an imprudence flowing from a frail brain or intellect. Rather, it means a moral foolishness, the result of those who play the fool by acting contrary to God's wisdom. This is the type of folly that can affect even those with IQs north of 160, like we see often among those in the academy or in positions of leadership in politics or culture. But that type of folly can affect everyone. The point for us is that while aphrosune originates in the heart, so does, to a degree, Sophia, true wisdom. While always a divine gift, as we see in the life of Solomon, wisdom is also the result of a desire to know the truth, a desire to journey and sacrifice for the truth, a desire to live the truth. In the psalm today, we see what happens in the heart of a person who's wise. The mouth of the just man murmurs wisdom, we prayed in song. If we're truly in a right relationship with God, we're going to be regurgitating on His wisdom, letting it echo within, trying to understand it, and speaking of it to others. To become just, to become holy, to become pure, flows from what we're murmuring on. And so everything depends on whether we're ruminating on the things of God, on the truth, on wisdom, or whether we're chewing disproportionately on politics, or sports, or weather, or filling our interior with the types of sinful desires Jesus describes today. Jesus, who is greater than Solomon, wants to give us even greater wisdom than He gave Solomon. Even greater wisdom than He passed on to the Queen of Sheba. Jesus gives us His holy word, and even more powerfully gives us the Holy Spirit to guide us through the gift of wisdom and prudence, to know and live wisdom. But it's up to us to desire it, to prioritize it, to seek it, and to live it. And the more we do, the more we will draw people to that source of wisdom, just like Solomon drew the Queen of Sheba, and just like the saints like Margaret Mary in every age, including our own, continue to attract to the God of wisdom, who seeks to take up His throne in our heart. There's a greater than Solomon here. What we've just heard is more valuable than $226 million. What we're about to do is more valuable than all the gold, precious stones, and spices in the world. We're going to enter into a holy communion with the wisdom of God made flesh. This is worth traveling across deserts and countries for 2,300 miles. May we, in response to these gifts, praise God like the Queen of Sheba, give ourselves and all we have in response to God's lavish generosity, and then, with pride and urgency, go out to announce with confidence this incredible gift of holy wisdom to the world. Praise be Jesus Christ.